This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. George Robert Carruthers was an aerospace engineer and astrophysicist who, among other accomplishments in his long career, sent what was essentially a telescope to the moon on one of the Apollo missions. It was mankind's first astronomical observatory located somewhere other than the Earth. George Carruthers died late last year at the age of 81. For his lifetime of achievements, in 2011, he was awarded the National Medal of Technology and Innovation by President Barack Obama. Long before that, though, he spent much of his childhood in Chicago, learning from astronomers at the Adler Planetarium. In the early 1960s, he attended the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, going straight from undergrad through a PhD, earning degrees in engineering and nuclear physics along the way. Toward the end of his career, Carruthers taught at Howard University, the historically black college in Washington, D.C. He was black himself and during his career made a point of mentoring young people interested in science, particularly those from backgrounds that have been underrepresented in that field. As I said, George R. Carruthers died in December, and today we're looking back on his life and legacy. Joining me for this conversation is Dr. David Dvorkin. He's senior curator in the history of astronomy and the space sciences at the National Air and Space Museum, which is part of the Smithsonian Institution. He's interviewed Carruthers and is also working on a manuscript on his life. David Dvorkin, welcome to the 21st. And also with us, as we're going to try and make sure that Zoom connection is established there and unmuted, also with us is Dr. Prabhakar Misra, who is a professor of physics at Howard University in Washington. He was a colleague of Carruthers at Howard. Prabhakar Misra, thank you for being here as well.
Hello, Brian. Glad to be here.
Great. Thank you for being here. And listeners, we're going to be talking about astronomy and space travel and race in those fields. If you have a question or comment about any of this, you can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. And David Dvorkin, I think we've got the Zoom sorted out. So I want to begin with you by talking, if you can talk a little bit about the device for which Carruthers is best known in language that's, you know, for someone who's a smart public radio listener, not a physicist. Can you help us understand what is the far ultraviolet camera spectrograph?
Okay. It is a single camera that has two ways to observe the universe. One is to observe it by breaking up the light from stars and galaxies into its component colors to examine the composition, the motion, and the intensity of the material. The other is a straight camera, which images just like a camera that you would hold in your hand. The significance of this telescope and of Carruthers' technique was that even though it was very small, you know, just a few inches in diameter, the mirrors, it acted like a much larger telescope. It had a detector instead of film, and instead of the eye, there was a special film that was used that was able to detect what, you know, what you call electrons. And Carruthers created a method, or I should say he improved a method that had been developed since the 1930s, that could convert light into an electronic signal. And once it was in an electronic signal, it could be amplified, just like, you know, an amplifier in a radio. And his amplification was many times, 10 to 20 times more efficient than a photograph alone, certainly more sensitive than the eye.
And unlike a lot of the research in the Apollo program, this was directed back toward Earth, right? For at least part of
it. Well, it was only partly directed toward Earth. But the point is that this telescope, the problem with Apollo and any space kind of program is weight and size. You know, you can't take a big telescope to the moon, and we probably couldn't do it today. Unless we really wanted to. But what Carruthers had was a very, very special device called an electronographic camera. that converted light into electrons and then amplified the electrons. So his telescope could be quite small, and it could observe, though, as it, if it were a powerful camera, many times its size. He and his colleagues observed as much as they could, not only of the Earth, but of the universe, looking primarily for gases and dust between the stars. This is what George is mainly known for. Before Apollo, he flew his instruments in rocket sondes, you know, small rockets that would not orbit, but would reach very high altitudes in space for a short length of time. And the payloads had to be small and powerful. And by 1970, he was able to actually detect expected amount of molecular hydrogen. That's hydrogen as a molecule in interstellar space. This was just not a simple detection. This was something that had been searched for a long time. You've heard of dark matter, haven't you?
Sure, sure.
Yeah, well, before it was called dark matter, ever since the 1930s, the universe didn't behave like it should gravitationally. It behaved as if there was an awful lot of matter there that nobody could see. Well, they didn't call it really dark matter. It was called missing mass. And in the 1960s, the missing mass problem was getting really quite critical. And so in some places, Carruthers finding this molecular hydrogen in space, which increased the amount of mass there that you normally couldn't see, didn't solve it completely, but it helped, they thought, at the
sure.
time.
So, all right, so let me. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I've got my eye on the clock here, and there's so much to cover in his life. Prabhakar Misra, I want to bring you in. You knew Carruthers later in his life, in career. I wonder if his. I think if I so much as emptied the trash cans in Mission Control, no one would ever hear the end of it. Was his involvement in the Apollo program a big part of his identity? Is this something he talked about a lot when you knew him?
Well, off and on, he would talk to the students about it because that was his signature accomplishment for sure. But more than that, he would encourage students to get involved in research and building telescopes. And I remember in the 80s, he started a program at a Naval Research Laboratory called SEAP, which was basically an apprenticeship program for high school students to build telescopes and in his NRL laboratory. And at that time, he gradually became more involved in outreach. And in the 90s, he became associated with Howard University integrally by becoming a member of the external advisory board to a NASA-funded center called the Center for the Study of Terrestrial and Extraterrestrial Atmospheres. And then in 2002, after he retired from NRL, he actually taught a two-semester Earth and Space Science course at Howard University, and during the academic year and during the summers also.
Okay,
so it was at this time that I got to really know him well.
Well, Professor Misra, you and George and others collaborated, I understand, in creating a whole new curriculum at Howard.
Yes.
That was much, that drew in students, and it was very effective. Isn't that right?
Yes, that is true. And George actually helped us a lot because he had already started doing this for the DC public school teachers. He had created modules and which we actually put it in electronic format and used it for the Earth and Space Science curriculum. As a result, the DC public school teachers would get credit for their accreditation and also use it in their classes for the material that they needed.
Yeah, that's right.
Professor
George was a very, very shy a person.
Sure.
You could walk down the hall and pass him. He would never reach out and say hello. But boy, if you reached out and said hello to him and then asked him a question, he would just brighten up and he would be completely devoted to helping you understand what it was that may be a problem. I've heard that from many, many of his colleagues.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. Because one of the things I wanted to do in this conversation is get a sense of the man himself. And well, I do have some tape, if I can, sorry to interrupt you again, but I have some tape from the oral history archives at the Johnson Space Center. And we can actually hear from Carruthers in his own words about some of his experiences through that. Probably just have time for one clip. This is one where he is describing what it was like to be at Mission Control while the Apollo 16 astronauts John Young and Charlie Duke deployed his far UV camera. I also pulled tape of them doing that for this clip. To set this up, you should know that this camera, while small by normal telescope standards, it was still big and metal and gold-plated. It weighed something like 50 pounds, at least on the Earth. Let's take a listen.
As is true, even now, the scientists did not have the chance to talk directly with the astronauts, but we did. We're able to hear what the astronauts were saying and give some input to the mission controllers about what the astronauts should be doing. And we could actually hear them talking about our instrument.
Okay, the UV cameras is fitting in the quad 3 pallet, and it looks normal in every respect to me. Let's see if we can get it out of there. Oh, look at that, Charlie. You got it. Look at me carry it. I'm carrying it over my shoulder. Y-16G is the neatest environment you can find for this kind of work.
John Young at this point is apparently setting up the ultraviolet camera while Charlie Duke is working on the Lunar Communications Relay Unit and more specifically the high-gain antenna.
John Young was using a sight on the side of the camera to point it at the Earth in order to set the reference for all of the other targets that we were going to be using. And he verified that he had sighted the Earth and it was in the center of his field of view.
Well, Tony, the old Earth is foresighted in the sight.
Outstanding.
I mean, right on, babe. Thanks.
Right on, I think, he said. David Dvorkin, unfortunately, only have just a little bit of time left.
Well, I've got some perspective on that whole thing.
Yeah, please, go ahead, briefly.
There was something of a crisis just before landing. When the lander undocked, the various rocket systems on the lander, you know, to land it safely, weren't working right, and it took a 6-hour delay to get it working. And during that time, Carruthers and his colleagues, like Thornton Page and others, had to madly recalculate where the celestial objects were that they wanted to observe, because of course the moon, even though it rotates slowly, it rotates, and so the objects change in position. Even more of a concern is that the sun was rising in the sky, and the camera had to be put in total darkness in the shade of the lunar lander, but that shade was moving away. Now, I've talked to people who were there with Carruthers, and yeah, he was intensely absorbed in the problem and working with Mission Control, but he never showed excitement. He was just intense. He was totally focused, absolutely focused. Really, quite a fascinating man when it comes to his ability to sort of shut out the rest of the world and just focus on what he does. And
sure,
he helps students do that too.
Well, and I'm glad
David,
you mentioned student. Go ahead.
You know, he was a different person altogether when he had to speak to his peers and when he had to teach a class. He was a very shy, reticent person, but he became absolutely a marvelous communicator when he had to speak to his peers, giving a scientific talk, or to his class when he was giving a lecture.
That's right.
And Professor Misra, just in a couple of sentences, I do want to mention, because it was so important to him. He mentioned in an interview that he did not personally encounter a lot of racism when he was a student at the U of I, even though he said black people were 1% of the engineering program at that time. But the face of the Apollo program was overwhelmingly white. He chose to go to Howard University, a historically black school. Why was it important for him to help bring up young black people pursuing careers in science? Again, just in a couple of sentences is all we have time for.
I think it's very important to understand where George was coming from. If you look at his upbringing and his real passion for space science and astronomy, and then I'm sure he had observed that there were very few African-Americans in these kind of fields in space science and technology.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we are going to have to end the conversation there. I wish we had more time for this. I want to thank and apologize to my guests for that. David Dvorkin is senior curator at the National Air and Space Museum, and Prabhakar Misra is professor of physics at Howard University. Thank you both so much for helping us to remember George Carruthers today. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. We will talk to you again next week. I'm Brian Mackey.